Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North.
Last year, we introduced you to John Garofolo, the editor of a collection of photos by the late war photographer and Milwaukee area native Dickie Chappelle.
Chappelle was the first U.S. female war correspondent killed in action. But before her death in the early days of the Vietnam War, Chappelle lived an extraordinary life, taking distinctive pictures that showed both the cost of war and the personal side of it.
Dickie Chappelle is also the subject of a new documentary showing twice during this year's Milwaukee Film Festival. Marianne Lazarski is director and co-producer of the film called Behind the Pearl Earrings. She told Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski how Dickie Chappelle's work first caught her eye.
Well, it's funny because as mentioned in the documentary, a lot of people never heard of her, and that includes me. I never heard of her until the Milwaukee Press Club was talking about her a couple years back when it was suggested that she be inducted into the Press Club Hall of Fame. And, you know, like many, we're just kind of like, oh, who is this woman? And I heard a little bit about her through that and then kind of forgot about it. And then her name popped up again. I'm a member of the Milwaukee Press Club, and so we were talking about the 50th anniversary of Dickie Chappelle's death, and somebody, I think, with the Milwaukee Press Club President's Council, who had suggested her name for the Hall of Fame, wondered if we were doing anything more with this. And, you know, people were just kind of like, oh, I don't know. And it just kind of kept bugging me, like, well, who is this woman? And so I suggested to our executive producer, maybe there's something here. It seems like she's important, but not a lot of people know about her, and she's local. And that idea kind of went away for a while. And then the Wisconsin Historical Society contacted us because it turns out they were working in tandem with John Garofolo, who's the author of the pictorial book on Dickie Chappelle's work. So it all kind of then started coming back to all of us, and we're like, hey, yeah, this is the woman that I talked about. So long story short, we decided this is great because the Historical Society had so much of her work there. So from a documentarian, you know, point of view, a lot of the research is there. A lot of the materials are there for television. So that's how it took off.
Well, despite being in the Historical Society, why do you think her name kind of fell to the wayside compared to other female war correspondents?
Yeah, that's a good question. No one really seems to know. I think it was timing. You know, timing is everything. And so at the time when she was trying to get started, Margaret Bork White and Marguerite Higgins, their names were already established and people knew them. So I think she just kind of flew under the radar and just kind of went along, you know, her business, and she was very determined and she did what she did, but just kind of got lost.
From what I gathered from the documentary, she was very set in what she thought was important work and important reporting. And a lot of the people in the production mentioned, you know, she's very much her own person. Do you think this was viewed as a good or a bad thing as she grew as a person and in her career? Because when she was younger, it's like, no, don't do that. Girls, don't do that.
Right.
But when it comes to being a journalist, you have to be, you know, very good about your own volitions and continue to do your work because it's dangerous situations. So obviously you need a good sense of motivation to be there.
Absolutely. And, you know, as pointed out in the documentary, you know, this was a time when she was growing up, you know, boys were supposed to be boys and girls were supposed to be girls. And as a kid, you know, she was a bit of a tomboy, very smart, and she knew what she wanted to do. You know, mom wanted her to be a writer and an English major and maybe a teacher or whatever, you know, just, but she wanted to be a pilot and she wanted to do her own thing. And she was kind of quirky in the sense that she changed her name several times. You know, she was born Georgette Meyer and then it was G.L. Meyer and then it was Dickie Meyer and all this, you know, so from the very beginning as a young girl, she didn't care that it was the 1930s and the 1940s. She was very determined to do what she wanted to do. And so, again, given that time period, I mean, think about it. Geez, I mean, you had to be that kind of character with that kind of personality to, I think, achieve what she did during that time period. You know, 2016, much different, thank goodness. But back then, you know, you had to be tough.
Yeah, she seemed very rarely disheartened by disapproval from other people. And another thing I found unique about her was her value of being your own person, of being unique, and how that translated into patriotism.
Yeah, she wasn't afraid to say what she believed. I think she showed what she believed even through her storytelling, her photographs, things that she wrote. She wanted to really tell the real stories. She didn't care what the government said or what maybe another reporter was doing. Her goal was to tell the truth. Certainly all journalists should do that. But she really went after those personal stories of soldiers. She really wanted to know about them, you know, their hometown, where they came from, you know, what they were interested in. It was certainly they were, you know, fighting wars, but she really wanted to know a little bit more. And she wanted to get to that, to the front lines, because she knew oftentimes that, you know, reporters were given information that the government wanted to make sure, you know, they tell the stories that will build morale because we're fighting war. But, you know, she really wanted to find out what exactly goes on here. And that's what she did.
What was it like for you as a producer to reach out to the people who knew Dickie personally? And did any of them tell you something that really stuck in your brain but ultimately couldn't get that final production?
Well, the challenge was to find people who were either still around in the Milwaukee area or who were still alive. And we didn't have a big budget. And so that's another challenge, to try to produce a compelling story and get the people, you know, who are important to this. So luckily, we were able to find her stepson. This is Tony Chappelle's son. Through another marriage, she did not have biological children. But he was out in New Mexico and wanted to talk about Dickie. He thought of her as a hero. And when you watch the documentary, you can tell how passionate he is about her and what she stood for and patriotism and what he learned from her. He had a lot of health issues, and so we had to wait patiently to see if we would even be able to interview him. But his wife always reassured me that he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. And turned out, even when we interviewed him, he was just out of the hospital a short time, still a little weak. But boy, he really, really wanted to talk about Dickie. So that was pretty cool. And I'll never forget his words about why he volunteered to go back to Vietnam.
That was powerful, yeah.
And I was like, wow. He didn't mince words or anything like that. He just told it, you know, the way he felt, and just admired her so much. And the other person, I think, who was interesting to talk to and something I'll never forget is Joseph Galloway, who's a veteran journalist and became friends with Dickie. He was a young reporter. He was, you know, in his 20s. I think he was 23, and she was in her 40s, and he learned a lot from her, and he described her, I thought this was kind of funny, as motherly. And Dickie would tell you that, well, she wasn't very much of a homemaker, or, and I don't know if she'd describe herself as motherly. But anyway, Joe was very upset to hear that she was killed, and very honest about his feelings and what he was going through. I mean, he was surrounded by war and, as he said, death and dying. And then he comes to find out that his friend had been killed. And it was quite emotional. So, you know, talking to him and listening to him, and it was a pleasure to meet him, but I'll never forget his description of that day when he found out that she died.
You also used her notebooks for some of the research. What's caught your eye or struck you as you're looking through these handwritten, you know, pieces of history of what was happening in her daily life?
So many notebooks and so many notes that we could only go through so much. But a couple of things that I actually pointed out in the documentary is, you know, you look through her notes, whether, you know, it was covering the Hungarian uprising or World War II or whatever, and notes about soldiers and, you know, where they were from or what was going on. But then all of a sudden you turn the page and there's a grocery list of what she needed to get. Or there's a note to say, don't forget to write to Marm. Marmy was a nickname for her mom. And so those very personal kind of notations that struck me, and that's why I included that. That, you know, she was very human. You know, she was very much focused on what she was covering, but journalists are human, and photographers are human, and it's you know, there it is in black and white. So I thought those two things were kind of interesting.
The very nature of her work being a war correspondent is that you could get killed in action, essentially. And she voiced her wish that if she dies, she wants to be on the field with the Marines. And ultimately, in the worst sense possible, her wish was fulfilled. And there's that last photograph of her dying on the battlefield, you know, and it's just heartbreaking. And yet that photograph is captured just as she might have captured someone else dying on the field. Do you think, hypothetically, if she could voice her opinion and say what her thoughts came to her if, as she looked at a picture of her dying, that it's important that that photo's captured, that she would have done the same thing?
I think so, because when you look at some of the other photographs, as I mentioned about soldiers that are blood-covered uniforms, and, you know, maybe their face was shot up or something like that. And, you know, some of those other photographs, even with children who are the victims of war, you know, it was reality and it was truth. And sadly, it was part of war. So, you know, I thought about that myself and I thought, geez, what would Dickie do? You know, would she have taken this photograph? I think she would have. I don't think it's something she would have bragged about or anything like that. I think it was just, in the moment, this has happened. And the fact that she was, you know, the first American female reporter killed in combat, certainly very significant, not to take anything away from anybody dying in war, but that historic moment. Yeah, I think she would have taken the picture.
Well, and it strikes you watching it in the documentary, and it's powerful how it kind of closes it out. But much as her war journalist friend said, you know, you're amidst all this dying and you're in the field and working, yet once that barrier gets crossed into that personal touch, like in the documentary show, many of your photographs would show war. But then when you hit that last photo of her, it strikes you in a whole different way. What did you feel when you saw that photo for the first time?
Well, it was the photo, and then it was the video, the film that we have of her actually dying. So certainly the photograph is a very famous photograph, and when I first saw it, you know, it's in black and white, and certainly it's very dramatic. And then when I saw the film, which is in color, we actually had a discussion amongst our production team about, do we use this film? If we do, how do we show it? Do we make it black and white, or do we use it as is in color? And again, it was, why are we doing this? And we thought it was important to show the real deal and what was going on. And so we didn't doctor it at all or change it at all. I think Dickie Chappelle stood for certainly is going after the truth. And so we felt that we did the right thing.
And having that in mind, as well as just who Dickie was as a person and professionally as a pioneer for future female correspondents, did you feel any pressure when you were putting this together, you know, pressure to get it right, pressure to uphold her legacy all within your hour of time? It's hard to do.
Well, I always want to get anything right, no mm-hmm. matter what I'm working on. That's certainly important. With Dickie, you know, just like her name, you know, you come across several different names. There were several different versions of certain things throughout her life, you know, whether it was her childhood or when, you know, she was with Tony Chappelle, or when she was covering certain conflicts. And, well, okay, this particular article says this. Well, but these other two articles say that. So that's part of the challenge of sifting through your research and figuring out, okay, you know, which source is the most reliable. But there were some discrepancies along the way that I had to question or be careful, and after a while, you know, you go with your gut instinct, your best research. But I think that speaks to her overall kind of quirkiness and individuality that, you know, this the thing about her name, you know, where did Dickie come from? That, you know, that's a very good example. Everything that I read about, people that I talked to, it was, oh, well, she admired Admiral Richard Byrd, and so she changed her name to Dickie. Okay, great. Well, I'm at the Wisconsin Historical Society, and I stumble upon this audio with Mike Wallace interview with her back in the 60s. And he says to her, where did the name Dickie come from? And she says, oh, that was my grandmother's maiden name, I believe it was. I'm like, huh?
Another thing to check.
Wait, what? And, you know, I checked with family members and I double-checked articles and I couldn't get anybody else to confirm that. So I just kind of put it out there and said, well, here it is. Who knows?
Her little secret to keep.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
She probably enjoys it, too. Yeah. Well, Marianne, Behind the Pearl Earrings is a really great documentary, and I wish you the best of luck in the Milwaukee Film Fest screening.
Thanks. It's quite an honor. I'm very humbled to be among hundreds of fabulous films. This is a first for me, and it's quite a thrill, but I'm very humbled and grateful to the Milwaukee Film Festival.
Well, and thank you for being here today, too.
Oh, you're welcome.
Marianne Lazarski directed and co-produced the documentary Behind the Pearl Earrings. It's about the life and work of Milwaukee native Dickie Chappelle. It'll screen tomorrow afternoon and next Monday as part of the Milwaukee Film Festival's Cream City series.